From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hodags, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, so keep it tuned right here. This hour, I think we'll be able to wrap up some of our gifting, the mutual gifting of strange things. Here in the studio, some which I acquired abroad, other things which Sam gleaned from the local thrift stores.
I meant to bring you another book too, but I was running really late and I had all sorts of. But I got you. I just don't have it to gift you right this second.
I like that. I needed a copy of The Dark 30 on my bookshelf. Of course, we've got a copy. You've found a thrift store copy of Speaking of Strange, the book.
I have a Joshua P. Warren section in my bookcase, which I have reorganized by, author slash subject.
Right.
Yeah. So I have a Joshua P. Warren slash local section.
Yeah. Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, before there was the radio show, there was the book. And it's kind of hard to come by. I got one from Downtown Books and News a few years ago, and I paid a retail collectible price for it. I think I gave 25 or 30 bucks for it.
Really?
You got yours for 50 cents or something, right?
Like maybe a dollar or something. But I got Shelly something. I'm going to turn your mic up, Shelly. Play what I got you.
Can you hear it?
Pretty nifty.
I love it. I love my TARDIS. It has a blinking light on the top, and you can imagine that it's going, it's flying through the universe. It's the bestest TARDIS ever.
If you don't know what a TARDIS is, it's a blue phone box from Doctor Who.
Yep.
They say Doctor Who is supposed to be a woman.
Yeah,
the new one.
You got a new one.
Is that a smushy? Would that be called a smushy?
Yeah. You want to squeeze it?
It's a TARDIS smushy.
Like a keychain or something. Neat. It's kind of a carabiner. You can hang it on your belt or your purse. I don't know.
Good stuff.
I'm not letting the cats near this.
Didn't know you were a Whovian, Shell.
How did you not know that?
Maybe I kind of knew you thought
Doctor Who was okay.
Don't
make me pull out the sound bite. Go ahead and do it. Do it.
No, you have it already.
I don't want to pull it up. I'm
recording. Exterminate!
My throat's a little bit dry tonight. You didn't get the full-throated version.
We got the idea.
Yes.
Yeah, the Daleks. Yeah, we know a little Doctor Who around. I don't totally geek out on it. My son does. My son's seen all of the revamped modern series. To me, Doctor Who was something that they showed on PBS in the 70s, and I thought it was kind of like I thought it was more like a soap opera.
Well, you know,
I never got into it. It was kind of like Dark Shadows.
I like Dark Shadows.
I wanted to get into it, but I just didn't have the time to go back through 53 years of prior episodes.
Every once in a while you can catch a marathon, and that's fun.
I didn't have 21 years of my life to devote to watching Doctor Who.
Oh, Doctor Who. Okay, then just do the more recent Doctor Who's.
David Tennant episode.
Exactly. Right. I started with David Tennant, and I have gone forward, in Romania.
We're a geeky show, but we got to draw the line somewhere.
In Romania, Dave Schrader and I bonded over Doctor Who.
Yeah, yes. You're not alone. There are a lot of Whovians out there. He's got a new...
In Whoville.
He's got a new appreciation in this... in this 21st century.
Sorry.
Shelley, I think this is about it, other than the fact that I found a postcard inside the cover of this little pamphlet. I mentioned to you the other night that I was going through some old books. And that was, I thought it was a good story, that I was sitting in a room with my 7-year-old Jesse. He's over in the corner playing Minecraft, and he says out loud, "Ouroboros boys." Well, the only reason he would know Ouroboros boys is because I talk about the local surf instrumental group. We use them for bumper musics here quite occasionally, Ouroboros Boys. But he wouldn't have known what in the world an Ouroboros was. He had just heard his dad talk about the Ouroboros Boys. But Jesse's sitting over there in the corner, and he says, Ouroboros Boys. And I said, Jesse, why did you say Ouroboros Boys? And he said, oh, I don't know. It just popped into my head. Literally, he's just staring at the computer screen playing Minecraft. And he says, oh, it just popped into my head. Seven-year-old kid now, folks. And the reason I ask is because I'm holding a copy of a 1947 Icelandic theosophical journal, Gangleri, for all you Icelandic speakers out there. And on the cover of this about as obscure a publication as you could make up, is the Ouroboros. Do you know what the Ouroboros is, Sam?
Sounds like a constellation.
It's a snake swallowing its tail. The emblem, like the mystical symbol of a snake in a circle swallowing its tail.
Don't tread on me.
No. It's more mystical than that. Maybe Kabbalah. I don't know. What magical tradition the Ouroboros comes from.
But it is an old pamphlet.
It represents infinity. It is a snake swallowing its tail. I'm holding an old pamphlet with an Ouroboros on the cover, and my seven-year-old kid is sitting in the other corner of the room, and he just blurts out, Ouroboros Boys.
Huh.
I was like, Jesse, what? Why do you do this sort of stuff? He's notoriously psychic about stuff. This is from the same, yeah, and this is what I'm going to give Shelley. This is from the same box of old publications. It was something that I had picked up and thrown in the box, and it had ended up in storage at my in-laws. My wife's always bugging me only when it occurs to her that in the top of one of the storage closets at her parents' or up over the garage in the loft are several boxes of books and weird things that I accumulated but never did manage to pack and fly home to the United States when I moved from Iceland 12 years ago. So in this box of arcane literature, I found one that I thought would be interesting to bring back for Shelley's collection, The Secret of the Successful Use of the Ouija Board.
And it's in English.
Yes.
Woohoo!
The foreword to this, which is printed on the last page and upside down, which just is a testament to the quality of this publication. The remarkable and illuminating data herein quoted was received in the presence of three or more persons at all times in the calm isolation of interior Alaska in 1917 by means of an Ouija board by Nellie Irene Walters and Clarice Eugenie Perrin. Copyright 1918. The publisher. So you got interior Alaska as the setting for this publication. The company that printed it, the Blakely Press, Broadway, Oakland, California. And then the previous owner's name written on the cover, Haldora Thorkelsdottir. And she lived at 38 Framnesveg in Reykjavik. At the time, she possessed this little pamphlet, and it showed up in a used bookstore in Reykjavik where I picked it up and threw it in a box. So now, 100 years after its publication or recording, 100 years later, The Secret of the Successful Use of the Ouija Board appears in Asheville, North Carolina. It's now part of the Shelley Wright Collection. You can take that to Nevermore Mystical Arts and share it with the visitors who pop in from time to time. They've come to expect strange things for you down there at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road, Nevermore Mystical Arts.
Oh, yes.
You're filling the boutique with all sorts of weird things.
All sorts of weird things, having all sorts of weird but fun classes.
Yeah.
Did I tell you what we did this week?
No, we haven't talked about it here. So far as I know.
We had a class in magical theory, and it was so much fun. Chock full of information. I mean, just incredible, incredible stuff. Mr. Witch came, and he used to be in a coven, and he shared all kinds of things with the group, and they loved it. I mean, they had so much information in their heads that they were about to explode, but they wanted more, and nobody would leave until we scheduled two more classes. Different, but same teacher.
Like a workshop.
Like a little workshop. This, and the next one is going to be a little bit more hands-on. It will be necromancy. So.
Very cool.
Very excited about this.
Necromancy is
dead people. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
More about communicating with spirits.
It's
just kind of a dark, fancy word for communicating with the dead, right?
Yes.
Necromancy. Exciting stuff going on down there at Nevermore Mystical Arts. And like I handed this pamphlet off to Shelley, and I said, that belongs, under the counter at Nevermore Mystical Arts. I'm going to try and get you some more copies of Fate Magazine because Phyllis has sent out some extra copies of that. I'm going to try and get the new Fate magazine down there to Nevermore so folks can pick up a copy of that if they would like.
They would
issue 731, that's got an article by our buddy Micah Hanks in there. It's got an article by Michael Peter Langevin, who is a great guy who has spent a lot of time in the Amazon and with the shamans, and he knows about the ayahuasca experience about as Caucasian North American would. Fascinating stuff in the new Fate magazine, and Fate magazine will find itself headquartered here in Asheville probably by the time the next issue hits the newsstands.
Where do you pick one of those up?
Fate's home base is gonna be Asheville. You know, it used to be on the newsstands and everywhere. Now I think it's pretty much a subscription-only sort of thing, Sam.
FateMag.com.
I have no idea. I don't know what booksellers carry Fate Magazine. You used to go in Barnes & Noble. 10 years ago, I would go in Barnes & Noble and buy them. But it's the circulation, the print run of Fate Magazine has dwindled a lot, so that they're kind of hard to get. So my suggestion to you, pick up a copy of Fate Magazine at Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road, because Shelly's connected. Shelly can get you one. I'll make sure that happens. I'll make sure we get those out there for you.
Thank you.
Rolling right along, let's call Mobius up and get him on next segment. Just check in with Mr. Mobius, the man behind so much of the content here on Speaking of Strange. We will be right back. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange on 570 WWNC and around the globe on speakingofstrange.com. Shelley just broke out her contribution to the giving that's going on here in the studio tonight. She handed me a bottle of cheer wine and a zero bar, What'd you get over there? Sundrop and a Zero bar?
Sundrop and a Zero, but oddly enough, I already had in my bag a cheer wine.
Okay, this goes back to a conversation 2 weeks ago when Sam was talking about being with his friends, and one of the guys would go into the convenience store and they would play a game, guess what kind of drink and candy bar they will come out with. And the example you used was a Dr. Pepper and a Zero bar,
yes,
which happens to be my son's
favorite combination.
And pretty obscure. So Shelley found Zero bars. They're great. By the way, the white chocolate, Zero bars and cheer wine. I was bragging on some of our local pop formulas, and I love my cheer wine and the Sundrop. Hey, we got Mobius on the line. Is that right, Mobius? Are you with us?
I am here in the flesh.
What is your candy bar soda combination?
That Zero bar and cheer wine happens to nail it for me, too.
Okay. That's gonna work. That's the combination of the evening: cheer wine and Zero bars. Mr. Mobius, you folks, listeners know the name, but we haven't heard your voice here on the air in a long time, Mobius, and it's good to have you on the air finally, right? Mobius does so much of the content, the majority of the Dark 30 content. Of course, you've got Joshua Dindy and a few other folks that help you out in rounding up the weirdest, darkest material we can muster for the Dark 30 hour. They don't call it the Dark 30 for nothing. But you also include a great many tales about technology, UFOs, the paranormal in general, things that just kind of get lost in the shuffle. You sift through and find some really good stuff. You mentioned to me off the air during the break that there is a UFO flap, the context for which, or the even the description of which, doesn't necessarily fit what we traditionally expect of a UFO sighting. Would you like to announce that one, talk about that situation a little bit?
I have to give some credit to Joshua and all of his research, because it kind of helps to explain what I'm about to tell you. But a lot of people are seeing UFOs that don't appear to be organic. They don't appear to be, you know, like nuts and bolts. They don't appear to be anything. They're almost like huge glowing plasma balls. And they just seem to move in very unpredictable manners. Sometimes doing a 180-degree turn on themselves and just leaving people saying, you know, what the heck did I just see? And, you know, these come in almost streams where you see the same thing showing up in videos. And they don't quite classify into any of the normal videos. They almost seem to be, like, garnering attention to the people who are filming them. And that's kind of the same thing that Joshua was talking about with his almost, you know, mini godlike UFOs. They're going in and out of the ocean and almost mischievously interacting with human beings. This seems to be almost the same thing, but a little different.
Wow. Do you see any parallels between these plasma UFOs and the sort of things that we've observed over the years down around Brown Mountain? You may have heard the report a month or so back from somebody over in Madison County who saw plasma lights or orbs of light behaving similar to what we've come to expect in Brown Mountain, but no longer just isolated to a specific area?
Yes. And, you know, Joshua and some of his research famously in the lab made a recreation of the Brown Mountain Light, and they were thinking about, you know, how this could tie into UFOs, and in Powell, this high-energy plasma discharge took the form of a UFO and seemed to be interacting with your consciousness. Now, we're going into a really odd thing about what is reality. But a lot of the people are saying that once they, you know, start to experience this, they can call them. And when they concentrate and they try to, like, meditate on these coming, sure enough, they start showing up. And so once they've had the experience, they seem to be more likely to see this object again. And that just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, at this point, it defies the reality of what we're dealing with. You know, so it's kind of neat. And if you go on YouTube and you start researching, there have been a flood of these. But also, you have to use discretion because there's a lot of fake stuff. So don't go to, like, the popular UFO channels. Try to find people who are genuinely having a unique experience putting the video up and showing it. And there's some really good things. If anybody ever emails me, I'll be glad to send you some links.
Yeah, you want to share your email address, Mobius?
Yeah, it's mobius@paranormal-investigation.com. So I don't mind ever sending links. I used to do this for Factor Faked, and I did their back research and analysis, so I always keep an eye on this.
And, of course, a lot of the content, even things that we don't get to on the show or things that we wouldn't share over the air, those links will show up on the Speaking of Strange Facebook page. I want to thank you for all the great content that you do behind the scenes on the Speaking of Strange Radio Facebook page. And people that are on Facebook need to check that out. A lot of this kind of steers me towards the thought that using paratemporal night vision technology might enhance the observer's experience of these new sort of plasma lights. And you happen to be a man who knows a little something about paratemporal night vision. Is that right?
We sell a lot of hand-select alpha, third-generation PVS-7s, and I actually can say we have the lowest price in the United States on these, period. But we only get maybe 4 to 6 pair a year, so we don't have a lot available. So the people who buy from us, I can say they have a fantastic experience. And Missy Hill is out there who's always willing to, you know, take people out and give them the night vision experience before they buy. But these do work, and I can give you what you said, the best example. You are probably 20 times more likely at Brown Mountain to see a Brown Mountain light with night vision than you would be with your naked eyes. So that's a very good example. But equally so, just any night in the night sky, you see space junk, satellites passing over, and if you have a good night, you see some really strange stuff. So you're using like 10,000 times light amplification, and you're seeing into the infrared. So the whole night sky just changes into something amazing.
Awesome. Mobius, where can folks avail themselves of more information about paratemporal night vision?
You can go to the website at paratemporal.com, or you can email me from the website, and I would be more than happy to talk to you about it.
All right, and that's paratemporal.com, paratemporal.com. Thanks a lot for coming on, Mobius. We need to make this a more regular feature. I know when Josh was knocking out new shows every week, and when he was here in Asheville, you were a regular color commentator. He would bring you in for a segment or two every week. We need to start getting our routine down and have you on more often. It's good to hear your voice, my friend. It's been a while. I don't think I've run into you since we were over at Byrish House some 8 months ago, I guess.
Time flies, and it was nice being here tonight.
Yeah. Welcome back anytime, Mobius. Folks, that's our own Mr. Mobius, the man behind so much of the content, the news stories you hear here.
I didn't even think he existed.
Well, here you go. Sam and you have never met Mobius.
I always thought he was some sort of alter ego of Josh.
Sam? I'm using a voice changer. This is just Joshua, okay?
It very well could be. How do I know otherwise?
the Mobius mystery. He exists, folks. He's our own Mr. Mobius, and you wouldn't get half the wonderful content you get out of Speaking of Strange if it weren't for Mobius and his team, Joshua Dindy. And there's a new guy on your team, Mobius. What's his name?
Oh, let's shout out to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, for all your hard work, too.
Excellent. And make sure you go by paratemporal.com to check out paratemporal night vision selected by Mobius for a real UFO viewing enhanced experience. You are listening to Speaking of Strange. We will be right back after these messages. Hang tight. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. Thanks, Mr. Mobius, for dropping in and letting us know about a new UFO flap that tends to feature something outside the traditional mystery ship, but something more akin to our own Brown Mountain Lights, plasma balls in the sky. Or Mobius said one person who captured video of one of these things described it as more like the ghost of a UFO. Ghosts and UFOs all in one. Sounds like good stuff to me. Let's get to some weird signs from the universe. Anyway, this is what I heard when I got back to work at Pizza Cabin after my return from Iceland. I walked into Pizza Cabin and my buddy Everett is there, and he says to me, the universe knew you were coming back because not 5 minutes ago, I cracked open a roll of pennies and look what I found for you. And he held up a coin, and from across the room, I said, oh, a 1943 steel penny, because they're unmistakable. Only that 1 year during World War II, they made the pennies out of steel or zinc. So there's the 1 year you got the silver penny, and he held one up and I said, oh, a 1943 war penny. I never see those things in circulation, and I have a close personal attachment to that particular coin because my grandfather, you know, at the time my mother was a young girl growing up, coming out of the Depression. Very, very poor people. She grew up in Yancey County, just a couple counties from here, you know, just barefoot, dirt poor farm kids coming out of the Great Depression through World War II. My grandfather probably would have gone off to war like most men if he hadn't been partially handicapped. My grandfather had gotten drugged by an ox when he was 18 or 19 years old and got crippled up pretty bad. And when he was 32 years old, he had a stroke and was paralyzed down the left side. So he had a very tragic life, my grandfather. But for most of his life, it was just a habit of his to save these 1943 steel pennies because they were unique. And in those, back in those days, a penny would actually buy something. You know, if you took a penny to the store.
You'd get like a half a penny, couldn't you? Didn't they have like candy or something? It was like half a penny,
right?
They did have such a thing called a half cent. Yeah.
So Yeah, one of these steel pennies in 1943 actually meant something. It was something that anybody would pick it up if they saw it laying on the ground. We talked about my penchant for picking things, shiny things or weird things up off the ground and putting them in my pocket this hour, whether it's sheep knuckles or tokens out of piles of human remains. They in the pocket they go. I'm a pack rat. Can't help it. But my grandfather would save these 1943 steel pennies, World War II pennies. And I remember as a boy going to visit my grandfather, and he had an old Dutch Master cigar box with like all of his little keepsakes in it. He lived with my aunt by that time, and he was wheelchair bound, and he didn't have much, a very humble, very meager existence, was just the kindest old man ever. And what I remember most about my grandfather was Red Man chewing tobacco and
plug or leaf?
A leaf, the loose Red Man. And the fact that he liked birds, and he had like paintings of birds and soundtracks of like bird calls and things like that. He loved nature, even though he was pretty much homebound, wheelchair bound. At that time, he loved birds, and he loved Red Man, and he had this little box, this Dutch Master cigar box, and inside that were just a few of his treasured possessions, some old snapshots, letters, and these pennies. I remember my grandfather's steel pennies from when I was a child. So a few years ago, my aunt, when I was over to visit her, she's in her 80s now, she came out with that cigar box, and I said, oh, my God, it's Grandpa's cigar box, and she opened that up, and she took the last of those steel pennies. Over the years, different ones, grandkids and things, she's given the pennies to, and there were three or four of Granddad's pennies still in that box, and she took those out of there and gave those to me.
Aww.
And so the last time I saw those steel pennies, and I always associate those steel pennies with my grandfather. It's a very personal connection. So when I walked into the shop the other night, and I'm kind of like, I've been in Iceland, and I'm seeing the world, and I'm like, ready to get back, you know, nose to the grindstone and do this. And I'm feeling a little disenchanted, you know, when you land back at home and it's time to go back to work, and you know you're going to be pulling doubles, and you'll be paying off the credit cards for the next 6 months. Oh, man, it was like drudgery. Me thinking, oh, I got to do this. Oh, I got to go back to work. And when Everett, my boss, says the universe knew you were coming back, and he holds up that silver wheat penny, that 1943 war penny, it really made me feel like my grandfather's example was, you ain't got it so bad. Look at you. You spent 3 weeks abroad. You're coming back. You're going to work. Everybody's got to work for the bread. You know, you ain't got it so bad. Don't feel down on yourself. Look at my example. And he was an inspiration to everyone who knew him. That's his epitaph on the gravestone, because even though he had been crippled, physically handicapped most of his adult life, that man was a worker. And he was a kind person, and he never begrudged anyone, or he never felt sorry for himself. And I think that example is something that a lot of people could learn from today. How many times do you get sick of people whining and moaning and feeling sorry for themselves, mm-hmm, when you've got nothing to feel sorry about? And that's something I would share with listeners, the way I would share it with my sons. Don't feel sorry for yourself, because you've got it pretty darn good. Look at this guy, you know. You eat all the food on your plate because there's people out there in the world who don't have any food. Did you ever hear that when you were growing up, Sam? That was the way our parents encouraged us to clean our plates. And I still, to this day, I feel guilty about leaving any food on my plate. And that was always a quote from my mom: you should be thankful that you've got this food. It may not be your favorite. It may not be hot dogs and pizza every meal, but You should be thankful you've got food, because there's people somewhere in the world that are starving right now.
I got this plaque at the flea market one time. It's in storage somewhere now, but it said, "Enjoy today, for tomorrow may be much worser." And I don't know, sort of the same thing. Like, appreciate what you have. And
right.
Speaking of, I was just looking in my bag for my phone charger, and I found another gift I brought for you, Vance. Are
hey.
You ready? Are you ready?
Oh, okay. Are we going to do this
ready?
On the air?
Here
I'm ready.
Here we go. Here we go.
Oh, my word.
It's a grandma doll head.
It's a grandma doll head. How about that?
I got a whole bag of them.
Aww.
And it's really cool if you stick a little light in there and then shut it off the lights, it glows. She's got little glasses. You can put it on your shifter in your car.
I'm going to see if I can put it on top of the
it could
bottle
be a cheer
of
wine.
Cheer wine. Grandma head. She's kind of like Aunt Jemima now on top of the
duct tape. She's on there.
You know what he's going to do. He's going to take the doll head and he's going to put it in his kid's room tonight and
you're
scare
probably,
the crap out of him.
You're probably right. My son's going to wake up with this creepy grandma head.
Well, you should start doing this thing that we did in the Steele family for years, which was, I won't say the person's name, but we would get this Christmas card every year. And we would cut out one of the faces of this guy on the Christmas card. And then during the entire holiday season, we would take like a piece of tape and put it on the back of the guy's face. And we would put it like on a pencil or something, you know, like on the eraser. And then like you'd be eating Christmas dinner and all of a sudden you'd see the guy's face just poking out of like the centerpiece of the table. Or you'd open up the cupboard to get a glass out and like you'd see the guy's face just tucked in the back. And so you found it and then you would have to hide it for the next person to find.
Wow.
So you could just have like the grandma floating around the house.
Yeah, she could be like the elf on a shelf around our house anytime, you know, grandma's head. I don't know where that came from, but I've never touched it and it just keeps moving around. And reappearing.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? Show me if you really like it. I can bring you one next.
It could be kind of creepy. I'm with Shelly. I'm going to try and make it creepy and scare my kids with it. It's a grandma head.
You could put some fishing monofilament through there and hang it and thumbtack it over your kid's bed. So when he opens his eyes in the morning, it's just dangling right in his eye.
Oh, the joy that idea brings me. You got the gears turning, Sam. A rubber grandma doll head.
Post a picture of it on the Facebook, the Speaking of Strange Facebook page.
I think I will. She's like our new mascot, Grandma Doll Head. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, and we'll be right back after this break. Hey, son, what'd you learn on Speaking of Strange last night? Dad, I learned to pronounce Bjork. It's not Bjork, it's Bjork. Kind of rhymes with jerk. And they also trill that R a little bit. So if I was going to try and say it as Icelandic as possible, I would say Bjork.
That's so pretentious.
That is.
Like American Bjork.
Bjork is okay. You can drop the phony accent and still pronounce the O with an umlaut as Bjork. You know how Motley Crue has the umlaut O in Motley?
Crue.
In
Motley.
Icelanders will call them Mertley. Mertley Crue. Mertley Crue.
That's dumb.
Well, that's what an O with umlauts is. If you don't know your umlauts, don't throw them in there, folks. Bjork. It's not Bjork. It's Bjork.
The familial last name of Steele is actually Stalhansky from the Swede-ish, and it has an umlaut in it.
Okay.
Over the A. So it would be umlaut A. Stuhlhansky?
Stahl, I think. Right?
It means fist of steel.
Isn't the umlaut just like a...
You're the one talking about umlauts over
here. I think the umlaut A is just like a short A sound. I'm not sure. They don't use umlaut A in Iceland. They use umlaut O, though. Okay, we're talking umlauts. We're talking Bjork. We're talking a little bit about Iceland. We've been peppering this show with all sorts of exotic elements. We even heard from Mr. Mobius. If you're just tuning in, then you're going to want to go back and check out the replay. The podcast should be up about the middle of next week. SpeakingOfStrange.com. Of course, you can see what the head honcho is doing. That's Joshua P. Warren at JoshuaPWarren.com. Shelley, is there a period after the P?
No.
No!
JoshuaPWarren.com. Last I heard from Josh, he was had a new batch of sigils. Oh yeah, he's credited as a
executive producer on the H.H. Holmes show.
Yeah,
American
Ripper. That's right. Josh is. Oh wow, yeah. Josh is credited as assistant producer on that. American Ripper. But anyway, American Ripper. The premise of that is that Jeff Bludgett was that
Mudgett.
Jeff Mudgett. I was thinking bludgeon as in murder, but Jeff Mudgett. Jeff Mudgett's great-great-grandfather was H.H. Holmes, the American serial killer responsible for the horror hotel, the murder hotel at the Chicago World's Fair in the late 1800s. And his grandson, Jeff, begins to look at the life of his notorious ancestor and realizes that at the time the Jack the Ripper murders were going on, his grandfather was in London. American Ripper is a series devoted to exploring the possibility that H.H. Holmes, notorious American serial killer in his own right, was also Jack the Ripper. Fascinating stuff to me. I love history and I love murder. So there you go. And mysteries. I love murder mysteries. Maybe that's the way I should put it. I love history, and I love a good murder mystery. So there you go. And speaking of, Legends, Secrets, and Mysteries of Asheville. Check it out. This is new from Marla Hardy Milling. Marla Hardy Milling was on Speaking of Strange with her last book, which was a similar collection of peculiar local tales. And Legends, Secrets, and Mysteries of Asheville includes a couple of stories where Joshua P. Warren is a key source of information. And one of the stories...
It's on nice stock.
Yeah, very nice. Glossy pages. One of the stories is actually completely devoted to some of our own experiences, Shelley. The story of the seance at Byrish House is in there, and O.C. Hamilton and... Gus and Emma Adler from the Sky Club, and how these ghosties from Bowcatcher may have made their way over to West Asheville.
This must be a relatively new book because it's got a story in there about the Billy the Kid picture at the, from the flea market.
It's brand new, brand spanking new. I think you just got it off of Amazon, right, Shelley?
I did.
So jot this down, folks. Marla Hardy Milling, M-I-L-L-I-N-G, the book Legends, Secrets, and Mysteries of Asheville.
It looks like a good read.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Let's see, what's this? Let's just take a chapter of it here. And, oh, wow, she's got the story about the discovery of the 1904 photograph album with a lot of historic places around Asheville that there were previously no known photographs, but it was found in a junk shop up north somewhere, and the person donated it to the library. A lot of history.
I love that stuff.
And, oh, man, I'm going to eat this up. Ghosts, Graveyards, and Zombies is a chapter where some of your Speaking of Strange crew play a key role. I guess the respectable part of the show is over. Speaking
Gonna
of Strange presents Dark 30 coming up after the break. Stick around if you dare.
The Dirty 30.